Blog Talk Radio.
Truth.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex.
Are the Bible's prophecies today's reality?
This could be the sign that signals the return of Christ.
World leaders are working behind the curtains.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. Secret societies, secret oaths, secret proceedings.
Now, get ready for an hour of truth that will make you think. We'll examine Bible prophecy and see how close we are to the return of Jesus Christ for His church.
You're in the zone. Politics, Israel, the Middle East, the revised European superstate,
and more. All in the zone. This is the Prophecy Zone with your host, Phil Armstrong.
Welcome to the show. My name is Christine Weick. I am filling in for Phil Armstrong today, and I thank him for the opportunity to do so. We've been slowly going through the book of Revelation. We were finishing up chapter 11 last week with the two witnesses, and I said last week we would work on chapter 12, the woman and or the next chapter with the woman and the dragon. However, things are moving in the Middle East. Moving to the point that I don't even know if I can cover everything in the half hour here. I'm going to try to break it down very simply. I am not a Middle East expert. The whole process over there confuses me, just like everybody else. But I think I've got a pretty good grip here as to what is happening in Egypt and how are we to look for the prophecy signs coming in its relation to the movement towards Ezekiel's war. And so I decided to switch my course of direction for this week, and I'm going to talk on the issue of this Egyptian uprising and how it relates to the forming of Ezekiel's war here. One thing I will say that maybe will shock you, we need to see the rise of Islam to see the fall of Islam. I'm going to explain this as I get towards the end. Hopefully I'll have time to do this. Let's go ahead and get some background here. I am not, like I said, not an expert on the Middle East. If I kill some of these names here, in fact, a lot of them I'm just going to kind of skim over because I do not know how to pronounce these Middle Eastern names, and I want to just go ahead and just move forward with the thought and then move towards the prophecy part. As we all know, if you guys have not been in tune to the news, then you need to. Breaking reports are coming in as of like an hour ago and on my radio station. So here we have the Egyptian President Mubarak, been in power for Egypt for 30 years. Is he a dictator? Yeah, I think so. He kind of fits the description of a dictator. He's run that country for 30 years. I don't believe he had any intentions of stepping down. He was grooming his son to take over the regime once he had passed on or had moved on. He has rigged the last set of elections to allow himself to win again. They've proven there was fraud involved with that. But he did allow just enough of the opposition party to maintain only a minority seat in the parliament there. So we have a person here who is controlling his own destiny without any regard for the welfare of the people. I will say, yes, he is a dictator. And yes, I can understand the Egyptians' plight with the way he has ruled. It has not done well. Commies do not do well under dictatorships, and I really feel for the Egyptians people, and I really feel for the Christians there. However, I think what we've got coming is much, much worse, not only for the world, but for Israel. But this is all pointing to prophecy that is stated in not only Psalm 83, but in Ezekiel 38 and 39. If you've noticed now, Mubarak has stepped down to the point where he says that he will maintain 7 more months of power, and then he will hand things over to a different rule. And he has named a successor the general of the Egyptian army. Now, the people are not happy. They want him gone as of yesterday. They do not want another 7 months, and I can understand their situation. They are also not going to be happy with his named successor because they believe he will just be another pawn of Mubarak and his rules and regulations that have been in place for 30 years, and they want none of it. Actually, the democratic rule there has been in place for 60 years. Mubarak has had control of that for 30. Something, too, that you've got to consider here, Israel has really been mum on the whole thing. Obama has been given his speeches, given his point of view, and he does side with the protesters. I think Israel at this point has remained silent. A little bit came out last night, and, of course, it did not go well. But Israel has remained silent to not create any more chaos. They feel that if Israel speaks at this point, the people will go into more of a fervor for violence, as they want nothing but to be enemies of Israel. And right now, this is how Mubarak stands with Israel. They are close allies. Mubarak has been a strong Western pro-democratic ally for the United States and the Western countries of the world in Europe. And he's also done very well in keeping the al-Qaeda presence low. He's squashed much of the Islamic resistance. He has basically done us a favor there, despite how he's treated his own people. He has done a tremendous amount of good for Israel. He has kept the Israel-Egyptian agreement in tight, just has kept it tight between him and Israel. In fact, his successor, the general, which is known to be taking over Mubarak's regime, has known to spend a lot of time in Israel. He has been a key negotiator with Israel concerning the Palestinians, concerning many issues in the Middle East, and that's where the people do not want him to be a successor, since he is linked to Israel more so maybe than Mubarak was. And that just does not sit well with the Egyptians. They really have a hatred for Israel. And this is starting now to ferment now as the protests become more and more clear. A little bit of a geographic layout here. This is how Israel's situation is and why they are on edge. Israel has got to be unbelievably close to panic mode at this point. And I think the rest of the world is seeing their dilemma here. But maybe Obama does not. And this is where I felt he should have supported Mubarak, but instead he did support the protesters more so. We have Lebanon and Syria. They border Israel to the north. Now, Israel has focused much of their forces on that point of the country. You have the Golan Heights up there, and this is something that has always been a concern to Israel because Syria has always been a staunch enemy, and as of today, they are still at war. Just a war of words, basically, but with Hezbollah to the north, they have a very strong enemy there, and Israel has posted their forces along that entire border. To the east, we have Jordan. Now, Jordan is a fairly good friend of the states as well as of Israel. But we also have that problem there with the Palestinians on that Gaza Strip. So that kind of lies towards the east, southeast there as well. So we have much of the IDF, it's called the Israel Defense Forces, they are located there along as well. So they have much of their forces on the north and on the east. Now, remember, on the west, there's the entire Mediterranean Sea, so that is no land forces there. Now, we also have Turkey that lies to the north of Syria. Turkey, is also at odds with Israel, was also a very good friend of Israel until that Armada episode happened. Remember, the Armada ships were trying to get into Gaza to provide for them supplies, and Israel stopped the ship. There was a confrontation that involved their the soldiers were attacked and blah, 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 and Turkey really turned against Israel from that point forward. So here we have Egypt. Egypt lies to the south. Now, because of Mubarak and his strong support of the treaty between Israel and Egypt, the IDF has no forces on the Egyptian border. They didn't need them. Iberic was strong to keep that free, to keep the protest, to keep the forces there from going against Israel. I mean, they had a good friend, and they put no forces because they really didn't feel a problem from Egypt. They had trust in Mubarak. That has now shifted, and Israel is now in a quandary because they are now spreading their forces not only to the north, to the east, but now they have a major line here to the south. And this affects the Suez Canal. This affects the Gaza tunnels, which Egyptian forces have kept in check so that the supplies of illegal weapons have not been able to get into the hands of the Palestinians and Hamas. That now is questionable. In fact, there has been reports that large shipments of anti-aircraft missiles have now been given to Gaza through these tunnels that the Egyptian forces are no longer controlling. So Israel is getting another enemy more and more supplied with missiles and weapons that it does not need Hamas to have. And now we also have the idea here that the Egyptian government and the Egyptian army may go against Israel now as well. The treaty will probably be the first thing to go with the new government. That's already been established as a fact. Whoever does take rule, whether it is the general of the Egyptian army or the Muslim Brotherhood, either one of those, the first thing from the will of the people was to destroy the treaty between Israel and Egypt. And that will be devastating to that southern border of Israel. Okay, I just brought up the word Muslim Brotherhood. That was created in Egypt in 1928. It has been low-keyed until now. The Muslim Brotherhood has basically been involved in many social and economic reforms throughout the world. If you recall correctly, the second-in-command of Al-Qaeda, when he was captured, I'm not going to say his name because I can't pronounce it, he was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Osama bin Laden is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. So can you kind of see who breeds these people? It's the Muslim Brotherhood. These are your fanatics in the Islamic terrorist community. Now, they have infiltrated many areas. They've infiltrated government. They do have some seats in parliament, minimal. But they also have a number of members in the economic reforms. They are in the educational reforms. They've got their fingers in just about everything, but never could gain power to take over any government until the event in Tunisia 2 or 3 weeks ago, when one man set himself on fire to claim he was sick and tired of the poverty and the economic decline. And that started a wave of protests that overthrew the government in Tunisia and set up an Islamic, looks like definitely an Islamic regime there. Well, that spilled over now into Egypt. And people are watching Egypt very closely. They have already been able to overthrow a dictator, or at least have forced him to step down in the future. Jordan now is in upheavals. We now have, Lebanon has been in an upheaval due to a trial that looks to have an overtake of Iran-controlled Hamas. We now have a possibility here of Syria starting to have revolts. We definitely can see what's happening in Yemen. Jordan has actually the King of Jordan, has fired his entire cabinet to appease protesters. You can see the wave now that started with one man in Tunisia and the way that the protesters are acting in Egypt. We have a problem coming here, folks, with the rise of an Islamic movement by the name of the Muslim Brotherhood. And they basically quote directly from the Quran. Their statement or their pledge is basically, we support Allah, we support Sharia law, we support the Quran, and we support the hatred of Israel. You can now see the focus of how Ezekiel's war is coming into play. Now, there's another man into this whole scenario. His name is Al-Baradi. I think I'm pronouncing that right, so forgive me if I didn't. He's been actually overseas and spent much time in Iran when he was run out of the country many years ago. And he has come back into Egypt to ferment the protest, to encourage them. And the people have embraced him to come back. And he now has joined arms with the Muslim Brotherhood to bring along a stronger opposition to Mubarak's rule. Now, a little bit of history on Al-Baradi, or Al-Baradi. He was the head of the Security Council of the UN before the new one that we have now. He was the former head. He was basically an absolute useless person in the IAEA. IAEA is the International Atomic Energy Association. They are the watchdogs for the nuclear agencies or for any of the nuclear countries, namely Iran. Al-Baradi is the one who sat on his hands most of the time while the Iran issue was coming on to the forefront as to having a nuclear possibility, and he basically let it happen. A lot of people thought he was in cahoots with Iran, and when he stepped down, Iran just basically already had a foothold into the nuclear community, and look at the problem we have there. So we can attribute most of Iran's rise to nuclear power to this Al-Baradi. And here we have him as a possibility of being a link to the new Egyptian government that could be formed here very soon, much to the demise of Israel. Now, let's go back here. A lot of people have mentioned, what about Psalm 83? What does Psalm 83 say about the destruction of the nation of the nations around Israel? I believe Psalm 83 does definitely have a prophetic part here. Where it's placed exactly, I don't know. I would like to say Psalm 83 may come first. But there are a few things in Ezekiel 38 and 39 that may be the result from Psalm 83. I'm going to read Psalm 83 for you from the Living Bible. Oh God, don't sit idly by, silent and inactive when we pray. Answer us, deliver us. Don't you hear the tumult and commotion of your enemies? Don't you see what they are doing? These proud men who hate the Lord, they are full of craftiness and plot against your people, laying plans to slay your precious ones. Come, they say, let us wipe Israel out as a nation. We will destroy the very memory of her existence. Does this not sound familiar? This has been the rant of Ahmad Ahmadinejad for years, and we're going to probably start to hear the rant coming out of Egypt very shortly as well. This was their unanimous decision at their summit conference. That is in the Bible, folks. There is got to be some sort of conference with these Arab nations. That has not occurred yet, and this is a prophecy that is yet to take place. They signed a treaty to ally themselves against the Almighty God. Now, the Bible does name them, and they go to Old Testament people, Ishmaelites, Edomites, Moabites, Hagrigites, people from the lands of Gebel or Gebel, Ammon, Amalek, Philistia, and Tyre, and Assyria has joined them too, as allied with the descendants of Lot. These countries here that I just named in the Psalm of 83 are the people that we are talking about in the news right now. We are talking about the Palestinians. We are talking about the Egyptians. We are talking about the Syrians. We are talking about the Lebanese, talking about the Iranians. This is unbelievable that it's going to come to the point where I believe that these nations will be struck very possibly by Israel. Don't know this, but there is something stirring in the prophecy of Psalm 83 that I feel may be in succession with Ezekiel 38. I'm going to read to you here Ezekiel 38, and there's a couple of things here that need to be paid attention to, because Ezekiel 38 cannot happen until a couple of things occur first. Let's see here. We do know that the land of Gog and Magog, I've been through this before with you, and it is the land of Russia. I will put hook in your jaw and pull you to your doom. This is God talking to Gog, the king of Magog. I will mobilize your troops and armored cavalry and make you a mighty host, all fully armed. And here Ezekiel is listing the countries that come with Russia. Perez, Cush, and Put shall join you too with their weaponry. So shall Gomer and all the hordes from the armies of Tagarma, the distant north, as well as many others. This here is an indication that we have a number of who? Islamic countries coming up against Israel. This is a prophecy here that we can now see start to unfold. I would have never thought Egypt, which is really considered Put or Libya. Remember, these countries weren't as defined as in Ezekiel's day as they are now. They have much more smaller borders. So back then, Put was probably the entire area of Libya and Egypt, very possible. It's also possible here, as Persia, we definitely knew, or Perez, definitely we know is Iran. Would that be not, there would be no surprise at all should Iran link with Russia. There is already an alliance there to move towards Israel and against Israel. Russia is not really a friend of Israel either. That's been proven. Now, Kush could be Ethiopia. Now, we already have problems with the African nations here with Tunisia, so Ethiopia is not much of a difference. Put could be Egypt or an area close to it. Gomer could be Turkey, as could Beth Torgma, as the area of Armenia and Russia. So we just have these groups of nations coming up against Israel, and that's exactly what we are seeing today. But one thing we need to be for certain, this is a very large mass movement of troops headed up by Russia. Now, if you go to, let's see here, Ezekiel 38, verse 8, that to me shows a very prominent clue as to what we are seeing now. After many days, you will be called to arms. In the future years, which I believe is our generation right now, you will invade a land that has been recovered from war, whose people have been gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. We have seen that. 1948, Israel became a nation. We have seen her grow and become a tremendous nation, even though she is very tiny. She has been the center of the whole world, and news generally always comes out of Israel. They have been brought out from the nations, and now all of them live in safety. Here is your first clue. Israel is living in safety at the time of Ezekiel's war. That right now is not true. Israel is at the point of war. There is absolutely no safety at all right now within the borders of Israel. I believe right now they're starting to really start to shake here and start to wonder, how are we going to deal with these offenses from all three sides? Is there a possibility that something happens that creates a safety that Israel is referred to here in Ezekiel? I believe it also comes at a point here where Israel is left unprotected. Now, that is farther on in Ezekiel 38, 10 and verse 10 through 12. Listen to what the Sovereign Lord says, and he's talking about Gog here. On that day, thoughts will come into your mind, and you will devise an evil scheme. I will say, I will invade a land of unwalled villages. I will attack a peaceful and unsuspecting people, all of them living without walls and without gates and bars. Here is a clue here. Not only is Israel at peace, but it is unprotected, and there's a reason for that. Without gates and bars in Ezekiel's day means this is a city or a nation that has no protection. And I believe this is also possible because we have now an offense here that could be against Israel. I believe that very shortly we are going to see Israel launch an attack and just set everybody back. They may launch an attack using nuclear weapons. They have that capability. They could launch an attack using their massive military strength just to kind of warn their neighbors, leave us alone. And it might be so productive and so successful that the nations that are thinking now to wipe Israel off the map, they are thinking secondly about this, and there is a possibility that there is some kind of treaty that's signed with Israel to say, okay, we get it, Israel, you are not to be messed with. So they set up a treaty. But is there also a possibility that we have a nuclear-free Middle East zone? That definitely, look for that in the news here. As Israel possibly uses a nuclear weapon against Iran, is it at this point the whole world says, okay, no more nukes in the Middle East area. Israel must also relinquish her arms for this. That would make Israel unprotected. Now, further on in Ezekiel 38, we have the words of God. Thus I will show my greatness and bring honor upon my name, and all the nations of the world will hear what I have done and know that I am God. What happens is these nations in the war of Ezekiel, Gog and Magog, come up against Israel, and because she is unprotected, no army possibly, and I'm assuming at this point Israel cries out to God to help, and God does listen to their prayers. God's anger is stirred up with this event of Ezekiel's war, with the nations coming up against her, and that includes Egypt, of course, and Iran. That God rises up in his anger, he throws down a list of plagues and pestilences that kill 80% of the army of Gog and all the offensive troops with him. And this is where God says, all the world will know what I have done and know that I am God. It continues on in chapter 39, verse 7. Thus I will make my name known, holy name known among my people Israel. I will not let it be mocked anymore, and they will know, and the nations will know, that I am the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. That day of judgment will come. Everything will happen just as I have declared it, says the Lord. Okay, here we have the rise of Islamic nations fervently against not only God, the God of Abraham and of Isaac, but also against Israel. Should you be an Islamist and you see God protecting the nation of Israel, the Zionists are protected not by Allah, but by Jehovah God, would that now bring into a thought, who is God on the side of? And this is where I see the fall of Islam, because it's going to be very difficult to explain how Allah actually was on the side of the Zionists, the Jews, and not on the side of the Islamists. This is something to keep in mind. We need to have this rise of an Islamic nation. We need to have this Muslim Brotherhood take over to fulfill these prophecies here in Ezekiel. See this happening before our own eyes as we approach this day of Ezekiel 38 and 39. And may we see the rise again of Israel and their acknowledgement of God. My name is Christine Weick. You can reach me at www.explainthis.us. I appreciate your comments and thoughts. Always can appreciate those. And I thanks again, Phil. You have a great day, all of you.